Today is the third day since these things happened. Yes, and certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early astonished us. When they did not find his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it, just as the women said, but him they did not see. So this is what they're thinking. Jesus walks up. He does not quickly respond with, well, let me lay it out to you. Let me tell you what's what. He responds with, what things? What's been happening? I want to hear your story. I want to hear your story. I don't want to tell you my story right now. Your story is what I want to listen for. And what we want to stress is that listening to someone is one of the most powerful ways you can demonstrate, you can show love to another person. We think I need to do something for people. I need to go give them something, provide this or that. Being a person with ears that hears and listens to somebody is very powerful. Huge, huge way of showing, demonstrating love to them. We use the term with missionaries called debriefing. And debriefing is a way to help them, help a missionary or anybody talk through some kind of a stressful, critical event, traumatic event, significant event, anything that's had an impact on them. And it could be even very positive. But we use the term debriefing when we refer to that. Most people that are struggling with some experience or event or a change, can be lots of things, even some of the things we mentioned this morning, really find a value in talking things through and hearing themselves and having some person with them. Many people, through that process, gain understanding and meaning about themselves, about what this situation brought about, what they've learned about God, relationships, others, their organization they work for, and many other things, often surprising themselves. But hearing ourselves speak often brings that to the surface. As Jesus says, out of the overflow of your mouth, your heart speaks. So as you're speaking, you're hearing things yourself that you may not be aware of until you speak them. We have a friend that responded to some debriefing and just listening that we were part of. And she says, having a friend with whom to talk things over is wonderfully clarifying. I am often surprised at the fact that until I hear myself speak it, I do not really know what I think. What strange and wonderful creatures we are. I had an experience like that when we went to Lesbos, an island, one of the Greek islands where the refugees were coming from Turkey. We went to help the people supporting refugees to share the gospel and do practical gifts and ways of showing love. And when we went, and some of you may have seen those piles of life jackets, thousands and thousands of life jackets, we went there just to kind of get a sense about that, just standing there looking at that. And as I was able to talk about how I'm feeling, emotions were part of it, and thoughts, and all this came as I started talking with Nancy about that. So that was just an experience for me that was significant, seeing that. I'd like to define debriefing as intentional listening, but a more specific definition. Debriefing is an intentional, scheduled, structured time with a caring, trained individual when we can tell our story after a traumatic, stressful, or significant event. It is an invitation, keyword, invitation to someone to tell their story for the purpose of helping them integrate their past experience with their present. That's very key. If you've heard people say frequently, you know, I know what's true in my head, but in my heart, just not quite there. No, it just, you know, it's like I got these two parts, the 12 inches between the head and the heart, as some would talk about it. And for me, I believe a big part of that is that we don't integrate a past experience with all the painful different types of emotions with the present. Our head kind of carries it, but we haven't shared it and connected it with the whole picture. So we've got two parts, and we go on with life for various reasons. God uses debriefing as a way of raising up false beliefs, things that we believe that we've carried around in one part of us, and we haven't really sorted it out, which impacts how we live life. I might believe from an experience that God really didn't care that much about me because of whatever the event was. So I put those glasses on when I walk through life. God doesn't care that much about me. He cares a lot more about pastor or a lot more about an elder. And then we carry that, and that's how we try to make sense about things. The debriefing also helps us provide different perspectives about life. Sometimes we look at things a certain way. Jesus did that with the disciples. After these two guys were walking down the road, he listened intently for quite a while. Then he gave some perspective. And that's when he went through the scriptures and from said how explained the whole process. And you can review that if you like later. And that's an important role too, providing hope again through that process. So I'd like you to think for just a moment. When was the last time you felt really listened to? Just take about 20 seconds. When was the last time you felt really listened to?
All right. I'm going to share now with you some highlights from a debriefing that I provided for a missionary woman on the field who I will call Sheila. It's not her real name, and I won't tell you what country she works in, but working in an Arab Muslim country. I want to share this with you to demonstrate kind of how debriefing works. It's one of the major things that we do in our ministry. Sometimes we take, like I said, a week to debrief someone. A minimum is maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours, but that's would be a pretty short debriefing. A half day would be maybe one of the more common time frames, but I'm not going to spend even an hour and a half telling you about Sheila's experiences. But I want to kind of demonstrate how it works so you can see how it helps. And in the meantime, as I'm telling a little bit of her story, give you a glimpse of some of the real life challenges that missionaries on the field are going through in many different places, including the Arab world right now. So Sheila is a missionary that we have known for, she and her husband, for about 15 years. They have received care from us kind of at different times during those years when their children, who are now grown, were teens. There were some issues that they wanted to discuss with us and process and find a way forward how to address. Sheila's husband, in the Arabian Peninsula, most of our workers, we call them, have secular jobs. They may be doctors or nurses, engineers working in the oil fields, a lot of teachers. And Sheila's husband had a secular job in addition to their calling to share God's love with the people in the region. And that can be pretty stressful at times, working for, the Arab boss, or maybe working for a Swiss boss, who knows, it could be a foreigner that they're working with. Anyway, their colleagues, you know what it's like. Jobs here can be stressful too, right? So we've walked through many different life events with them. Sheila and I met up this past spring at a women's conference in Dubai that was being held there that we were both speaking at. And she had written to me in advance and said, could I have some time to talk with you about some things that are going on in her life, in the country they serve, which is not in Dubai. So she and her husband have been working in the area in the same city for about 30 years, nearly 30 years. So my first question coming into the debriefing then is basically, would you like to tell me what happened? Just an open invitation to share, what's going on for you. And she kind of reviewed that they've been working in sharing God's love with the local population there for about 30 years. It was a very slow work, one or two people coming to faith at a time and often not being able to share that publicly or even with their own families. But that they had finally formed a small church of local believers there, and they were meeting on a regular basis. And as is the way in Arab community, it's a very tight-knit, very community-focused, not nearly as individualistic as Americans are. But even with us, we know community is important. It's just then even more so, higher on the scale for them. So Sheila and her husband were very involved with that community on a daily basis, had been. And we're very excited to see some of the Arab men starting to take leadership roles in the church. Every missionary's goal is to see a reproducible church where they can step back, you know, and the locals will take over leadership and bring new people into the family. And that was happening. Then, last fall, government officials began calling in both the foreign workers and the local believers and asking them questions and what's going on, and we know you're meeting. And this was going on actually throughout their country. We also talked with other people in other cities during that same visit who would be called in to the CID, which is kind of like the FBI, and shown stacks of their own emails that they, you know, had been corresponding, printed out text, all their text messages where they'd corresponded with people. And so they knew kind of who's talking to whom. So they were called in, interrogated or questioned. And Sheila's husband was one of the last ones to be called in. So there's kind of that waiting on pins and needles, you know, when's that going to happen? And then after he was called in, then the government officials came back and said, you have to stop all meetings. You can't do this. This is against the law. And so since then, they had not been able to really have any contact with their local Arab friends for fear of the repercussions for the friends more than even for themselves. So that was pretty much what happened. My next question is, how did you feel when that happened? What were your emotions? She told me of being very afraid of imprisonment and or deportation for her and her husband and the few other foreign workers that were involved, afraid of imprisonment or loss of family, job, belongings, or more for the locals. And then feeling very relieved when the government came back to the issue, you can't meet. But still, you know, knowing that they're being watched, and so what does that mean? So then my next question for her is basically, so what were you thinking? It's a third question in a debriefing model. We were expected that we would be imprisoned or deported, and I was thinking that was going to be such a big loss. I mean, this has been our home. We raised our children here. You know, we've lived here for almost 30 years. Don't want to leave. And then very surprised again when they weren't imprisoned or at least deported. So then the fourth question in debriefing is, how is that impacting you now? So that's what happened. That's the story. But what's going on for you right now? She said she was still feeling very sad that the meetings had ceased, really missing her friends, feeling very lonely, feeling like all of that, you know, her almost 30 years of labor was a waste, fearful for the local believers. Will they be able to keep their faith and stay strong without, you know, without being able to meet together, so in isolation? She was feeling very useless, feeling like her purpose for, you know, being in the Arab world was gone. And feeling a real loss of hope. As Bob mentioned in Luke 24:21, when the disciples said, but we were hoping that it was he that was going to redeem Israel. And you're kind of implying they had lost their hope, and she also had felt a real loss of hope. So we explored these emotions. I validated them, said, yep, most people who went through something like that would probably be feeling at least, you know, as bad as you're feeling. Pretty normal response to an abnormal event, I said. And then I would summarize some of her beliefs. I hear you saying you feel like your work was a waste, I hear you saying you feel useless. I hear that you've lost your purpose. And as Bob quoted another woman that we had debriefed that said how she, once she articulated, once she said what she was thinking, she knew what she was thinking. You know, it's like you kind of don't know what you think until you hear yourself saying it, I think the other gal had said. And so that had happened for Sheila as she had spoken the things to me, and then hearing me quote them back to her, it's like, oh, wait, is that really what I believe? Is that really true? So then she was able to reframe some of what was going on, that even though they can't meet together, that her Arab friends still do know the Lord and that she can trust them in his hands. That her role in that particular group may be gone, or it may be later, it'll come back. You know, she'll be able to meet with them again, maybe in a changed format. But that the Lord can still use her in that country for other purposes. So you can hear the hope starting to come back. So then I asked her, what have you learned from this experience? And she said, the story isn't over yet. This isn't a done thing. She shared how she had begun to regain hope for the future, that and trusting that the Lord can use this trial to cultivate patience and wisdom in her and in her beloved local friends, that he will be able to use this for good. And she said, maybe most of all, she began to see Jesus in the story, to see that he was at work and how he had been with her the whole time. And as Luke, in our story about, you know, the disciples on the road to Emmaus, in verse 31, the disciples say, then their eyes were opened and they knew him. And for Sheila, as she went through this debriefing process, it was really an opportunity, an experience for her where she saw where Jesus really was there with her in the situation. And she was thankful then for the role that she had had with these friends, for the deep friendships, and thankful, again, that they weren't imprisoned or deported. So my last step then, my last question in debriefing is, what is your next step forward? What's next for you? And she said then, for one, she's going to be waiting on the Lord with hope and expectation, where she had been just sitting with hopelessness and a sense of loss and purposelessness. And then she said, right then an idea came to her. She said, I'm going to begin to invest in some of the other young worker women that are in my city to support and teach them. I can share with them what I know about Arab culture, about how to interact with Arab women, and that will be useful to them, you know, as they reach out in years to come. So through debriefing, Sheila was able to tell her story in a safe environment. She received some affirmation, some compassion, and active listening was a huge part of it. God began to restore Sheila from her depression, from her sense of hopelessness and powerlessness. So he touched her, he strengthened her, and he encouraged her, and gave her a new vision and a sense of purpose to continue serving him in a very dry and difficult land and situation.
So we've been talking and sharing about the Middle East and other parts of the world. But now I'd like to just kind of bring it down to this part of the world, your community, people in this building, this church. He wants us all to provide a good listening ear to those that need to talk. And he also wants us to have courage to say, can I share with you something that's important to me? So those are two things that are on God's heart for us. And in today's world, listening is something that is not offered very freely because we're so busy and all these things that are happening and distractions that go with it. But we have found it has huge implications, and we know that it is God's heart for us to love others, whether they're Christian or not. And listening to either group is very, very powerful. Just listening to some of the prayer testimonies and just some of the things being here in the last couple months, For some of you, a need to talk through what's going on in the election process is going to be big. There's lots of anxiety and fear and all this stuff going on. Talking it through with somebody that will listen and help you help to understand will be very helpful. For others, you watch a lot of TV news or internet news, and you spend too much time on there, and it's really impacting you if you're following certain stories. You may need to talk about it. And we've talked to people that are really struggling with certain news stories that they watch a lot. For some, it is a loss of your health. Used to be able to do this, can't quite do that the same. Energy level's not the same. I'm having to come to terms with a new season of life. Can I talk about it, how it affects me? Some might be an aging father that has to move into a different facility. We have aging parents, and there's a lot of stuff around that that is constantly changing. Constantly changing. Or somebody that has a struggle with mental health issues. That family, whoever's connected in a confidential way, needs to process that. That is big. That is very difficult. Or Trudy, that is coming back from China fairly soon. Typical missionary comes back from overseas, gets 5, maybe 10 minutes of listening before the subject's changed. That's over the 16 years, that's the average I've heard from missionaries. In our own experience, for the most part, 5 to 10 minutes, change subject, we're done. Let's talk about something else. And we've had people after an hour to hour and a half just go, that is huge. You sat and really listened and wanted to hear how this affected me. Big, big issues. So be aware of what's going on. Have you shared with people your life or not? Are you available to listen? So I'd like you to think as we talk about what is your next step after hearing what we shared this morning. There's a step you may take, not 20 steps. What's your next step? For some of you, it might be, I'm aware I need to talk to somebody. Might be the pastor, might be a friend, might be a relative. I need to talk to somebody about a topic. That might be one of you. Another one might be, I need to contact a person I know that either was shared this morning or hasn't or is not here today or a family member or friend. Invite them. Would you like to tell me your story? How are you doing? I've got time. I'm making time. I'm making time for you. One of the challenges of contacting somebody is I know they're too busy. They don't have time to listen. They're too busy. And a lot of people are too busy. If you are one of those, you may need to talk to somebody about how to adjust your commitments, your schedules, so you are available to be the person that somebody can listen to or speak with. This is very common in this country and other countries. Being busy and not having time for people is huge, huge. And the last point, if you don't need to talk, be aware, am I making myself available to basically invite somebody to talk? It's their choice, no pressure. Would you like to talk? So as we started it, just basically thinking, when was the last time you really were listened to? This could be a turning point for you. What is God putting on your heart for your next step? Let's have a brief prayer. Father, allow us to have the courage to take that next step, act on it, and see what follows after that.